We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
It's been a basketball-y day because we have this sheet, this pristine sheet.
I haven't written anything on mine yet.
No,
have
it's
you?
Nice like this. No, I don't think I'm going to because I don't know anything.
You don't think you'll ever do it?
No, I used to, but I don't know anything. And I guess that's not an impediment to success. I just sort of...
It's not.
You can put Duke in as the champion and then work my way backward with everything else.
You probably, reverse engineer a lot this
probably
year.
Probably end
yeah.
up just fine. It's I will let my son do his multiple brackets and contests or whatever he wants to do. He's done better at it than I have.
I'm going to do a survivor pool this year for the first time for the NCAA tournament. I've done one for football seasons and whatnot. But this is... It's a little different, and I like the pressure in it. For the first 2 days, since you've got so many games... You've got to get two right each day. So two right the first day, two right the second day, and then you move on as you would normally with a survivor pool. You don't just get to get one out of two right. You got to get them both. So
that's like going to cull the herd pretty quickly.
It will. I'm sure there's buyback ins. I haven't read actually the rules. I know there's an email out there that I'm supposed to respond to, but I haven't done it yet. I'll do it after the show. But I liked the idea of a survivor pool. I'll fill out the bracket, and I'll do that whole thing. I didn't want to do squares this year. I like squares for the Super Bowl or for like a football game, a college title game or something like that. But the squares over the whole length of the NCAA tournament seemed a little, it seemed to wear a little bit on me last year.
I don't know if you have any friends who traditionally take the Thursday and Friday of the tournament off from work.
Yes, we did that for quite some time. Yeah, up until I got into this. And really, even when I started, the first 3-4 years, we were taking the first 2 days off. We'd go up to... Milwaukee a couple of years. We did one weekend here, the Thursday, Friday, and just really enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah,
you know how you do it.
We used to make it a thing, especially when it also was concurrent with spring break. Our tradition was, there's a restaurant in Deerfield called Deer Frank's. I don't know if it's still open. Just great little hot dog stand.
Great
joint. And we at the earliest possible time, we would get a huge bag of dipped Italian beefs with spicy jardiniere.
Oh, hell yeah.
And as many bags of hand-cut skin-on fries as we could.
Hell yeah.
And then just all go to somebody's house and just set everything
Sit
in front
down,
of us.
Lay it out,
and indulge.
Do
and that would be the first round, yeah. Right? And then we'd sort of work our way through that, maybe play a little pickup basketball in the driveway, play 21 or whatever, the three of us. Then you work. Then you get into the second round of stuff. And then maybe for the night games, end up at the bar at Strike and Spare.
And
you know what? That was living.
That's
man.
The way to do it. That's the way to do it. You really have to lean in those first 2 days to the lull. It happens right about it's like 4:30 to 6, right? That's where the tournament games kind of drop
where you
off.
You sort of float through.
And you figure out what the hell you've been doing.
That's you play basketball. You got to work through the Italian beast by playing basketball.
Right. So or you that's when you make your bar change. That's when you decide that you're not going to be here for the night games. You're going. You're finding. You're looking. Mm-hmm. You're out on the and then you find your next bar. However, if you hang out with us at McGee's
Correct.
On Thursday, you're set. You're at McGee's. You're with us. You got Mac and Parkins. You got a whole bunch of Dos Equis. That's all you've got to do. We've got you set for Thursday's day one.
It's a long way of telling you, come join us Thursday. We're holding down the fort all day.
Damn right.
At McGee's. It's 950 West Webster, right in the middle of the DePaul campus there. And college basketball, first round, tournament tips off. We at the Score and Dos Equis. Have you covered special broadcast? We're there. Big deal. The Parkins are there. You can watch the tournament, and there's Dos Equis specials and food.
We've got it set.
Us. It's going to be great. Now, I mentioned that some things went on in the NBA, and you really weren't. You may not have known these things. Giannis Antetokounmpo had a game of 50 points, 15 boards, and 5 assists.
Yeah, the afternoon boys are going to have to buy Greek food again.
Oh, that's right.
40 was the threshold for that, right?
What do you do for 50?
I think you get extra appetizers, probably some flaming cheese.
Well, they had that anyway.
They did that anyway?
They had the whole
You're right.
Banquet.
When they go big, they go big. I keep forgetting.
Giannis Antetokounmpo is just the sixth player since the ABA-NBA merger to hit those numbers in a game. 50, 15, and 5. How many of the others can you name? Each of the others has done it once.
50. Moses Malone.
No.
Really?
Really?
I thought that was very safe with the 15 boards.
Nope.
Damn.
Well, the Moses rebounds, he would just go bounce it off the corner of the backboard to himself four or five times.
Yep. Do you still count those?
Yeah, they're rebounds.
Do you not?
Yep. Wilt?
No.
No Wilt.
No Wilt. And no Wint either.
Malone never had a Carl.
No.
I mean.
No.
Michael?
Michael is one.
Okay.
Correct?
I'll say LeBron, though I'm not all that confident that he's had a 15. Okay.
Three are active. One is a current broadcaster. National.
Barkley.
Nope. Good guess, though.
Bill Walton.
No.
Ooh. Active. The other three are active? Or
three? There's four left. Three are active. The fourth is a current broadcaster.
Did here's a dark horse candidate. Did Dirk?
No.
Okay. Give me one of the actives.
Russell Westbrook.
Oh, you know what? He spent a, this was a couple years ago, right? He spent a game pleading for rebounds from his teammates.
He spent 3 years pleading for rebounds. And Steven Adams just says, okay, I'll box people out. You grab the ball, mate.
I was halfway into that sentence thinking, yeah, there was one game where Russ was pleading for rebounds from his buddies.
The broadcaster, I would have been here all day before I would have given you Chris Webber.
C-Web. I'd have got a Reggie before I got to C-Web.
And your other active players who have done it are perennial MVP candidates.
Durant?
Nope.
Has Embiid done that already?
Nope.
Boy, I suck at this.
Yeah, this is... Give us the other two.
James Harden.
Okay.
And Anthony Davis. Hmm. That is your list of 50, 15, and 5. But... That's not all, because that leads us to this. Alfred Payton.
Yeah, with the hair. Well, formerly of the hair.
Alfred Payton became the eighth player in NBA history to record a triple-double in four straight games.
And nobody saw any of them.
No, not right? A damn one.
And no one knows who he is or what he does. For most people, without a wacky hair... Alfred Payton could walk into a room and people would say, yes, can I help you? Can you name the other seven players to record a triple-double in four consecutive games? One of these is a total outlier.
Well, I'll go Oscar Robertson.
Oscar Robertson.
Okay, all right, yeah. So I got the one. That's good.
Jordan.
Jordan is another, yes.
Not Kobe?
Nope.
Okay.
Russ.
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 Always, the answer is always Russ.
Of course he has.
Jason Kidd?
No. Not a bad guess, actually.
Chris Paul get there?
No. One of the guys you are not going to get because of when he played, and a lot of people don't remember this guy because of really how good he was.
Bob Pettit.
And actually, he's a teammate of one of the guys already mentioned. But I'm just going to give the name because you're not going to get Maurice Stokes.
Yeah, I wasn't getting there.
Maurice Stokes of the Cincinnati and Rochester Royals.
That wasn't happening.
Who was the second overall pick in the 1955 NBA draft.
Teammate of Big O then.
Correct.
Okay.
So we've got two all-time greats and an active player remaining.
Four consecutive triple-doubles.
Oh. Did Kareem do it?
No.
Wilt.
Wilt, yes.
Yeah, Wilt is, we should have led with Wilt.
Yeah, Wilt did it. Oh, when in doubt.
Always
did Bill Russell get enough assists?
No.
No, I doubt it.
He did not.
Wait, okay, so...
now you have an active player and an all-time
active
great.
Player, okay. I was going to guess at whether... I don't think he did, but I was going to guess at whether in one of those MVP years, Steve Nash got himself a crazy 3 weeks or something like that, but I... Okay.
Harden.
Harden is the active player. And the all-time great triple-double in four consecutive games, also known for multifaceted ability and a rare height for his position.
Magic?
Yes. Okay. Magic Johnson. Wilt Chamberlain, Oscar Robertson, Maurice Stokes, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden, and Elfrid Payton.
Put him on the list.
Put Elfrid Payton on that list with those people.
Well, some good guesses coming in, and actually just some good names. Pistol Pete, David Robinson, Vince Carter, Jeremy Lin. Good guess there.
Jeremy Lin.
From the 262. Is it weird that, you know, you're doing these NBA lists, right? The 40 points, or the 52, rather, and 15, the four straight games with triple-doubles, and all I can think, because it's tournament time and I have the bracket in front of me, the only thing, the thing top of mind right now is whether Zion Williamson is capable of any of those runs in the NBA.
Because that's, in the NBA, like with those names you're saying?
Yeah. Is he capable? Does he have a skill set that makes you think he's as multifaceted as some of those names have been?
Did you see the bounce pass he made on the dead run?
I think of all the things, honestly, I'm glad you brought it up, because in his skill set that I am most surprised about, it's his ability to pass. I mean, whether it's the home run ball that he throws in the second round of the ACC tourney, he's got an ability to move the basketball. I mean, I don't know where his court vision necessarily is. I mean, I guess when you're able to get to whatever spot you want to on the floor, you can move the ball around pretty accurately. But that's, I know he could probably still get better as an on-ball defender, and how much better he can get probably depends on how much weight he's going to put on between the next, 3 years, something like that. I've been impressed with his ability to take guys off the dribble, though, like you say, he's attackable in the first dribble or two, mm-hmm. just because of his height and his speed, and he's not quite there yet. But I know this just sounds weird, but this is how we scout guys now. In a bunch of Instagram and YouTube highlight videos before he got to Duke, I saw some of that. And granted, he's playing against high school kids.
You know,
it was a walk for him.
See, the highlight
lists. But I saw
lists,
some of that.
And I'm always really careful when I evaluate a star player's passing on some of that highlight stuff, because more often than not, the great player is drawing extra attention. And that means guys are open. And I give a little, finding the open guy
right.
is great, but that's an expectation. That's almost mandatory.
Agreed.
That is different than within the framework and within the rhythm of an offense,
mm-hmm.
making a pass because you've baited a guy into leaning the wrong way.
Finding somebody through the lane or making a pass out of the post like that.
Right, or knowing when somebody's swinging open and able to get them there around a screen. I give less credit for somebody. They always say, the guy's such a great passer, when it's because he's really a great scorer. And he's drawing people to him. You finding the open guys, you better do that. Like, that is
okay.
That's the basics.
Where then is the middle ground for you? Like, his ability to pass on the break? Because to me, I see it two different ways. He's able to do it, and he's able to lead a break if he has been able to lead a break this year when he's healthy.
I don't want him to give it up on the break.
No, neither do I.
Getting it.
But when he does, and he hits the NBA, he's going to, like you say, he's going to see more attention there anyway. He's going to see better defenders at that. At that size and that speed ratio. But the fact that he's able to leads me to think that the other, like, if you look at the, what's the map called again, where you've got the all sorts of, it's like a trapezoid kind of thing. It's like this big, you've got these skill sets on either side.
Oh, yeah,
I
forgot what they call that.
Acceleration and dribble
and
handle
and
shooting.
And how far each vector pulls out from the middle. Yeah.
And I think his ability to.
Stargrass?
That sounds right. So his ability to do that in the break leads me to believe that some of the attributes elsewhere on that star graph are higher than you might otherwise see, because he's Zion playing against college kids that aren't where he's at. I like having watched him do it.
There'll be more people ready to receive a pass above the rim, more guys on the dead run who can with a wider catch radius.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. You see guys elevate their game. That's what people said about Luka Doncic, too. They said, just wait. If you look at some of his, the amazing passes he made on his highlight reel were weak side passes, the velocity of the pass to the weak corner.
Yeah.
Where he's dribbling in an angle from, say, between the circles toward the foul line extended. As there's a cutter going strong to weak, and his ability to almost make that shortstop throw from the hole accurately in rhythm to the shooter in the corner when you knew he was getting with faster and more aware players. That's a more Euro type play. Mm-hmm. It's not something you see run as much in the NBA, but my God, was that impressive when you first saw it.
So it's those types of passes that makes me worry not so much, but want to see more tape on Ja Morant, because as I mentioned, I'd seen a couple of games of his, you know, throughout the year, and for whatever reason, the ones that I sat down to watch are ones where he's driving to the bucket and gets, you know, he's sucking all kinds of attention over to one side of the rim, mm-hmm. and he'll use that rim as protection, either to go up and put one up or just to drop a pass off to the big guy underneath. And this the basketball is landing on the feet of the big guy, because
right.
he's not looking for it. He doesn't see it. It dribbles out of bounds, and then Austin Peay has another possession going back the other way. And I'm hoping that Morant going to a level where there are more expectations and more athletes to receive some of the creative stuff that he does is a benefit for him and not a hindrance. On the same side of things, it's like we've talked about with a number of guys that scout him. He's still 6'3". You know, and that is a point guard size and speed and weight ratio. You know, there is a, you know, this town knows it as much as anybody. There is a limiting factor, perhaps, to being that size.
You know, when I heard scouts saying some of these things, it was with Lonzo Ball and watching his ability to keep his head up very early on a possession change or after a defensive rebound, his ability to get the ball accurately down the floor. It's not the baseball pass,
uh-huh.
but just some of the longer diagonal passes, being able to find guys. And I remember a scout saying, if you think this plays well at this level, just wait till he's with thoroughbreds. You know,
dudes that are ready to
they can get out there and know that he's going to see him. The quarterbacking skill, that kind of thing.
I'm excited for the tournament to get rolling. It'll be a good day at McGee's to get things started. Watch the first day. It's I believe it would be the first remote that we've done, or the anniversary of our first remote together. We were out there,
yes,
at some other spot, sitting down and watching a whole bunch of basketball. We're doing it again on Thursday at McGee's with a whole bunch of Dos Equis out there.
We are going to get you educated on these brackets, and we're going to make sure we get the thoughts and opinions of maybe the most knowledgeable college basketball guy we have in this building. Eli Hershkovich is going to join us next with info on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
To no one's surprise, the overall number one seed is Duke, with the Blue Devils playing in the East Region. The Blue Devils, the 14th time they're a number one seed, their first since 2015. Four of their five titles came as a number one seed.
One of the highest-rated CBS NCAA selection shows in recent memory. The overnight
like a four and change.
I want to say the overnight was a 4+. So maybe they finally figured it out. Less talking, less fake drama. Just give us the damn bracket and then talk about it. And one of the guys who knows more about it than any of us is joining us now, Eli Hershkovich of The Score, who is on Twitter at Eli Hershkovich, is with us on the Bernstein and McKnight show. Eli, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? It's the best time of the year. It's Christmas, it's Hanukkah, it's Kwanzaa, it's everything combined.
No. Well, your first thought when you saw all the names and the seeds, was it fair enough or no?
Yes. My one issue with the selection committee was, like we talked about during the break, Michigan State being in the Duke region, in the East region, as the number two seed in that side of the bracket. You think after winning the Big Ten tournament title, after that comeback against Michigan, three wins against a fellow two seed in the Wolverines would get you a bit of an easier route to the Final Four, a bit of an easier region. But they get the East region, so you're able to get your fans out there a little easier than if they put you in the South or the West as well. And you also have a bit of an easier path to get to the Elite Eight than if you were put in another side of the bracket.
Did you hear Mike DeCourcy this morning when he was on with Molly and Haw?
I did.
He's like, screw geography. Like, who really cares about geography when most coaches say all that matters is the matchup?
Win basketball games. And Michigan State presents a lot of matchup problems. One of the best point guards in college basketball, and Cassius Winston, still doesn't get enough respect for me. His ability to, his vision in the half court and in transition is phenomenal. They have some really good bigs in Nick Ward, Xavier Tillman, and Kenny Goins, who's come on from three big time in Big Ten play. Also, Matt McQuaid, a tremendous perimeter defender. Michigan State has
and
a lot of pieces.
Shooter. His range is crazy.
Yeah, from the wing, from the corner, he was money during that Michigan game, especially in that comeback, too. I was so impressed. That's back-to-back comebacks against Michigan facing double-digit deficits against one of the best defenses in college basketball.
I was pretty entertained watching Tennessee get absolutely bludgeoned by Auburn in the title game there in the SEC. I had seen Tennessee a couple of times, really liked the mix, and they just... I mean, they turtled in that game. They were just hit by too many three-pointers. What do you make of that conference overall and the couple of seeds that came out with Kentucky at 2 and Tennessee at 2, and then you've got Auburn at a 5?
I love Auburn, and I hate saying that because I have a Tennessee future, a 35-1 to begin the season, so I would love the Vols to go on a run and win the national title. I do expect the Vols, I mean, that region that they're in, it's not the toughest one. You have Virginia, but their side of the bracket, I expect some upsets along the way in that bottom half of the bracket for the Vols. You have a St. Mary's team that could upset a Villanova along the way. Tennessee has a nice path to get to the Elite Eight, but with Auburn, their three-point shooting, this was a top-10 team coming into the year. Jarrett Harper and Bryce Brown gave that Duke team all they could handle in non-conference play in Maui. A really good defender in Malik Dunbar, too. So this is an elite defensive team, one of the better shot-blocking teams in college basketball. They could shoot the three at a really high rate. They push the floor. And you think about some of the teams in their side of the bracket in the Midwest region, a UNC team that, yes, they can push the tempo as well. Kobe White and Cam Johnson can rip it from deep, but they allow a ton of threes. So if you're looking ahead a little bit, everyone wants to take New Mexico State, right? Because you have the 12 seed against the 5 seed. It's the traditional upset in the first round. But last season, you had three number 5 seeds get past the 12 seed. So it's not like that happens every single year. There are other upsets I like along the way. Auburn has a lot of pieces to make a deep run in this March Madness.
When we're talking about the next coaching cycle, The coaches that play their way, coach their way into the conversation for a promotion, who are they?
Nate Oates for me at Buffalo. I love what the Bulls have done this year. CJ Massenburg is an elite guard. And what Nate Oates does in the half court, his motion offense, runs a bunch of ball screens. Buffalo has a shot to make a run. They did it last year with beating Arizona in the first round, losing to Kentucky in the round of 32. But that's an elite offense and a really underrated defense as well with Massenburg, who could do it at both ends. Oates is a damn good coach. And then with Belmont, who could play themselves into the round of 64 and potentially make a run after that. Belmont runs a lot of ball screens as well, a motion offense, a lot of backdoor cuts. I don't know if you guys saw the Belmont-UCLA game earlier in the year. Probably not.
Is it Princeton stuff?
Yes, Princeton-style offense with Rick Byrd, a really good
like
coach.
Like Bill Carmody, Northwestern, that kind of thing?
Correct. Okay. A lot of ball screens, getting a lot of backdoor cuts. And he ran, I think it was 3 straight backdoor cuts against a terrible UCLA defense that were able to knock off the Bruins in non-conference play.
That helped get Steve Alford fired.
Exactly. Screw Steve Alford. I hate UCLA more than anything. Iowa not. I actually do hate Iowa more than UCLA, so I'll take that back.
That's fair.
But with Rick Byrd, a really good Belmont team that could shoot the three. Tough matchup in that playing game against Temple because Temple, the Owls defend the three at a really high clip. But Belmont is an interesting team. I would say Buffalo and Belmont with Oates and Byrd respectively are two coaches to watch for.
So Kansas gets a 4 seed. They get Northeastern in the first round. Then it's either New Mexico or Auburn, two teams we've talked about already. And then the top seed in that half of the bracket is North Carolina. Is there, the FBI is going to be involved in some way here once the tournament is over for Bill Self and Kansas. Like, is there reckoning on the way, perhaps?
I could see it, and I could also, we saw the reports over the weekend, quote-unquote, Bill Self is going to be the next Bulls coach.
Uh-huh.
So he's coming to Chicago now. I'm just kidding. No chance that happens. You could possibly see Bill Self be on his way out at Kansas. I mean, DeSosa, who is their big, was ruled ineligible. He was a contributor last year, and then he's ruled out for this entire season. As a Buki has also been in a similar issue, and you think about what Bill Self dealt with in the past, too, with his past teams that have had elite talent. Cliff Alexander was on that Kansas team, a Chicago native, and he was ruled ineligible down the stretch for the Jayhawks a few years back, 3 or 4 years back. But my biggest concern with Kansas overall this year is their inexperience in the backcourt. Two really young guards, Nevon Dotson and Quentin Grimes, and also a Chicago native in Charlie Moore in the backcourt. So they have backcourt depth, but their youth, two freshman guards in Dotson and Grimes, Grimes has come on of late from three, but that Northeastern matchup is really tough. Kansas cannot defend the three for their lives. We saw Iowa State bash them from deep in the Big 12 tournament title game, and Northeastern can gun it from three, man. They crushed their CAA title game performance against a really good Hofstra team that has Justin Wright Foreman, an elite scorer in college basketball. They slowed him down. They shot it really well from three. I love this Northeastern team on the money line to pull off that 13-4 upset.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With only five home games remaining, the Chicago Wolves are making their push to the playoffs. Celebrate this 25th anniversary season with free parking, courtesy of Kia, as well as discounted concessions. For ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. You talked about Michigan State, Michigan a little bit. Of the other Big Ten teams, and they are myriad, who else has an opportunity based on either the way they're playing now and or their current path?
I can't say I'm a fan of any of them, to be honest. I do not like Purdue by any means. Carson Edwards, as much as he could shoot you into a game, he could shoot you out of it. And we saw that against Minnesota in that quarterfinal of the Big Ten tournament, 7-24, something like that. He did that at Minnesota, too, the week before that clinched a tournament berth for the Golden Gophers, essentially. Carson Edwards is a high-volume scorer. There's no doubt about that at 5'11". The guy could shoot it from three. He could drive in the lane. He's really quick in transition. But that is a small ball Purdue lineup that thrives off shooting threes. And you look at that St. Mary's team that I talked about. St. Mary's, a team that the Gales that beat Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference title game. That team defends the three at an extremely high clip. They rebound the basketball at a top 12 rate defensively. So you're talking about a team that can board with Purdue on the glass, a smaller Boilermakers team, and slow down the tempo because Purdue wants to push the tempo. That's the key in this tournament. It's controlling the pace. And when you think about a Purdue team that wants to play fast, St. Mary's is an elite sluggish offense, and I don't mean sluggish in a bad way at all.
Say, how many teams are there like that? How do you recruit to that? Virginia's unwatchable.
Well, that's
really not bad. And Wisconsin a little bit, and you mentioned Belmont is a team that runs structured offense. There are so many coaches that have trouble doing that because every kid that you're talking to wants to run. I still think it's a tough sell to say, hey, come here. We're going to have fewer possessions and we're going to score less.
Well, the biggest part for a Purdue team that lost four of its starters last year. So you're talking about implementing a brand new offense, especially with a bunch of new starters in that lineup. And you think about a St. Mary's team that is so experienced. Northeastern is much more experienced than a really youthful Kansas team. So to be able to play at that pace like Tony Bennett does at Virginia, you have to have experience.
Is with Ja Morant and Murray State, I would imagine that the betting public is going to force decisions on Murray State that are going to be a little bit different than what the outcomes of their games might actually be. It seems like those two things are going to be at odds as you're watching games. What are your expectations for him, and how would you bet that team specifically?
Well, looking at Murray State in the first round matchup against Marquette, before the seedings came out, I was not a fan of Murray State by any means because when you think about that offense, when they don't have three-point shooting. So if you collapse on Ja Morant, you can't really stretch the ball from the perimeter, and you're talking about a team that is forcing the ball inside a little bit when Morant gets too aggressive and you're down, like we saw when they played some high-major teams like Alabama in non-conference play. They could not shoot it at all, and that cost them against the Crimson Tide, who are not a tournament team, but that's still a high-major opponent in SEC play. So you think about Marquette, a team that lost in the semifinal of the Big East tournament. I like the matchup for Murray State as much as I just said that the Racers could have a tough time in the NCAA tournament. It all depended on the draw, like any matchup. And Marquette in Marcus Howard, one of the best scorers in college basketball, has that hand wrist injury, and it really affected him against Seton Hall. Did not shoot the ball well from three by any means in that semifinal matchup, and missed a bunch of free throws down the stretch too. So as much as you want to expect a Ja Morant Marcus Howard showdown, it's going to come down to the other perimeter threats for Marquette. And don't get me wrong, this team could shoot it from three as well with the Hauser brothers, Sakar Anum, a really underrated defender, a good on-ball defender. That's going to be the matchup to me if Sakar Anum can slow down Ja Morant for Murray State. But on the flip side, Murray State has a top four perimeter defense in college basketball, and Marquette loves the three ball. Obviously with the Hauser brothers and Sakar Anum, and Marcus Howard, I expect Murray State to pull off the upset here. I think the line is about 4.5. I grabbed that last night. It opened at about 5.5.
Wow. unique players. We know the NBA prospects. Is there anybody in here who I'm going to love because he's fat? Or
who's the Kevin Pitsnoggle of this tournament? That's the question.
Yeah, it's like, do you have
find
any sort
me
of,
a Pitsnoggle,
like a favorite pet player on one of these teams who just either has a totally funky style or is just shoots weird or has a bizarro name? Who's in this tournament that we might remember for reasons other than the fact he's going to be drafted?
Well, you think about across college basketball. I see. I don't have that fat point guard. I don't have that chubby
John
guy.
Bagley?
Lord yeah, knows I want a fat point guard.
Right. I was going.
Like a Tommy
I was
Coverdale.
I was running through the NCAA tournament yesterday, and I couldn't really find that type of player, that type of a bigger point guard, a 5'11" point guard that you're going to love, that's going to run you through an NCAA tournament. Sorry to disappoint you there, Dan, but I will say a player that has a somewhat unorthodox shot, and because he's a lefty, you don't see that 6'8" stretch forward lefty in college basketball as much. But the two I'm looking at are Belmont, an offense that we talked about, Windler, their 3-point shooter. He could stretch it from 3-8. Ignas Brazdeikis from Michigan.
Yeah,
that's a lefty stroke from three. He could take you off the dribble.
He's a big personality too. Like
exactly.
He's always talking to everybody.
It hasn't worked out from his perspective against Michigan State swept in three matchups against the Spartans. But that's two guys that could stretch the floor from three. Again, my issue with Belmont, though, is that Temple team can defend the three, but two stretch fours that can space the floor. I love watching those 6'8" lefty bigs that can space the floor. So those are the guys I'm looking for, Windler and Ignas Brazdeikis.
It's a good start looking for our Pitsnoggle there. It's a good start.
It's a good name, too, Brazdeikis. Got to love that.
Feeling it a little bit. This is good, Eli. Thank you,
Top
man.
Notch, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Outstanding. Eli Hershkovich of Sports Radio 670 The Score, who is very much our resident college basketball expert, as you can tell. That's going many names deep on many teams.
He is many names deep. So he had six guards on Belmont for you. Well, they have. It's like he had the water boy.
But it's true that some of the stylistic differences that you don't see in the NBA is one thing you do see in an NCAA tournament, where you do have a certain team that, because of the kind of athlete that they get, is forced to play a certain style. And you settle into watching one of those teams that's running Princeton stuff.
I mean, I guess in a weird way, you got to credit a coach who's going to run a system that's not all that NBA friendly. You're slow to you're Matt Painter, like, good job, way to get guys to come in and run this offense that's going to slow things down, even if the guys are accused of horrible things.
I think we have another set of tickets to give away, do we? I believe Rick Camp, and I think he's saying yes, even though he's not 100% certain.
No, I am. It's just when it's the season ticket giveaway and then tickets for something else, it's keeping that straight. That
right. Yeah. So we have
a set
of tickets for the Cubs season preview party and a whole bunch more to talk about as we lead you up to the McNeil and Parkin Show. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
/12:44 on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, taking you up to our afternoon transition, and it is time to give away another pair of tickets, which means you got to tell me which caller to the contest
means
line.
I got to do that whole thing again. I will give you caller four.
1, 2, 3, 4.
You're back, baby. Caller four to the contest line. 312-591-6700. Wins a pair of tickets to see the Cubs season preview party with Matt Spiegel and Pat Hughes on March 24th at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage, courtesy of the Illinois Lottery's new Lucky Sevens instant ticket. Must be 18 or older to play. And as I mentioned, remember, you get throughout the day here.
Yeah.
Almost every show in our major day parts here is going to give you a chance to win Cubs season tickets, to qualify, to be that caller number six to the contest line when you hear the Pat Hughes call. So don't miss a minute. It could be in a commercial cluster. It could be in program. You don't know exactly when it's coming, but that's a very, very cool thing. I've been lucky enough to have done the show that gives away those tickets before and seeing people sort of winnowed down as their number is pulled and they're removed.
Weren't you telling me that there were like agreements made?
Yes.
Between some finalists,
they were horse
about
trading.
How they were going to
split
some tickets and whatnot.
Yeah, that they didn't
like
say,
hedging bets.
It's exactly what they were doing. Say, look, there all kinds of negotiations going on. Say, look, I don't want all the games,
right?
But then there was like drafting different series. Like if I get the Cardinals series and you get the Sox series,
right? And you just take the Pirates games because I don't care. You're good there
and stuff. By like they were really getting into these high stakes negotiations. It was like it was.
Was there any holdout? Was like a lone holdout saying, "No, I win. I'm taking them all, and the rest of you can go."
No, I think they were down to two when I saw, but it was like working out a nuclear treaty. Like they were really coming up with if this, then that.
Makes sense, man. That's some valuable real estate.
Trust but verify, and some of these things. So it was. But that's the kind of mind where I couldn't do it. I'd be like, "Wait, what again? Hold on." Can my accountant do this, please?
You got to do the whole schedule, man. I mean, you can't leave a stone unturned. And then you got to know which games that you want to move later on.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like there are valuable pieces of real estate that you can grab, and whether you're going to be on vacation for this week, but you still want three or four of those games so as to move some of them, maybe sell them around. I mean, it's a valuable commodity. I'm saying
it did, however, take some of the drama out of it when you realized after the fact that everyone's a winner.
Well, that's Mitchell just have to throw in a curveball or something like that halfway through, like throw off the arrangements or make people, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something that we can do to spice things up.
Like kick somebody off the island final. Or
yeah,
something?
I mean, maybe the storm has to shrink some. Maybe that's what we need to do. Speaking of, I don't know what it is about today in baseball or why all these stories are coming out today. Maybe it is just because Jeff Passan wrote the big one.
Don't tell me it's another Fortnite story.
It's another Fortnite story.
Oh, my God.
It's another Fortnite story. This is from John Lott, who covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic. The Blue Jays are going to impose a pregame curfew on playing video games in the clubhouse this season. That's according to manager Charlie Montoyo, who's a Joe Madden guy, I think. Some players suggested there was too much Fortnite last year, he says. Film at 11. They were getting a film at 11 o'clock. So, yeah, there are teams now saying, listen, you play your video games, but they're done at a certain time prior to game time. It needs to go away. I really figured, though, that if you had a team going good enough, and I think you could, now maybe it was the end of the season for the Phillies that really kind of threw things over the rails, but that Phillies team started out fine. It started out well and had a chance even before it was ready to make that next addition. This is a Blue Jays team that's expected to go absolutely nowhere.
They have to impose.
And will make only one headline, and it's when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hops up into the big leagues and starts mashing.
Fortnite curfews Fortnite. Before a game?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it raises the question. By the way, you notice I said raises the question. I didn't say begs the question. Because begging the question is something different.
It's like dodging a question?
No.
No.
Begging the question is
just alerted to this a couple of weeks ago.
To beg the question is a logical fallacy, which is to assume an answer in evidence that is still in abeyance.
I see.
It's to assume that while something is undetermined, it's to assume something has been determined that is actually at the time being questioned.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is. But it raises the question, which incident or incidents actually occurred where somebody in the front office or somebody in the field managers actually said, what are we doing here? Young man, we have a game to play.
It could be as simple as national baseball writer makes headline with Carlos Santana story. You know, we read this story a little bit earlier in the show that Carlos Santana was bashing televisions in the final 2 days of the season because some of his Phillies teammates were playing Fortnite during the game. Kind of a sacred space in your day, you know, during a baseball game while you were a baseball player to play Fortnite. So that makes the headline. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the answer was real simple and it was either a new manager or like Charlie Montoyo is, or a front office who just saw Fortnite going around a little bit. And now with a national headline and a chance to nip it, you just say, listen, we're done. We're not doing this before games. Young team like the Blue Jays, like it's Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez as your venerable veterans. Like you don't have guys there who are going to stand up and go, no, but we will have the Fortnite. I mean, that's not
happening. For everybody who's bringing up, I understand that Apex Legends is new and hot. However, they're still playing Fortnite. It just seems like that every texter wants to be the cool guy. Nobody plays that stupid game anymore. We play Apex Legends now. Okay.
That really does come up every single time we mention Fortnite stories in Major League Baseball.
Enjoy whatever you want to enjoy.
Yeah.
That's fine, but not everybody is enjoying Apex Legends. Some people are still playing Fortnite. It's okay.
Most of the millionaires playing baseball are playing Fortnite, yes. In fact.
Yes, you can enjoy. I assume Apex Legends is the same kind of thing. I
I have no idea. I'm not there yet. But there are classes and
just
stuff like
as this. I'm learning about Fortnite, just as I'm learning about, and I did not know the learning certain building patterns. I had this was all new to me, but apparently it's a big difference. Like once you get into a firefight late in the game, to understand how to quickly build and unbuild certain shooting positions, it's cool to
watch.
That's
where it's at.
It's cool. So
you get mobile.
That's the
hostile.
Well, but also if you have somebody playing on the actual console, it's different than if somebody's playing mobile or if somebody's playing on a PC.
Yeah, I would much rather. Well, the PC, you've got the advantage of hotkeys, I would imagine.
Yep.
So you're just, you know, kind of stroking things pretty easily there. But the controller, so to speak, the controller is where I'd feel most comfortable. The mobile game, you got to imagine, while it's fun and everything, you can't be at the top of competition.
Yeah, I wasn't
just
sure.
Just punching buttons on a touchscreen.
Like, I hear them talking during games like, oh, we're in a mostly mobile lobby or something. Like, you get in a mobile lobby and you end up in a game with other mobile players, but you're not a
KYP,
mobile.
Right? Just have an expectation of what your opponents are going to bring for you.
I guess. And yeah. 618 says, I've recently threatened to take a hammer to my kid's phone after being told to hold on once too many.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, well, when that becomes an issue, I will walk down and just turn it off. Because if I say dinner is in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's in 10 minutes.
That means dinner's in 10 minutes.
Sure.
And you better not complain about it being cold if you're going to sit down, your sister and your mother are going to sit down and eat, and I'm going to go through making an actual seafood pasta from scratch with actual clams.
Damn
and actual
it.
And the clams have just opened properly, and now I can add a little butter in there, and it was a
Jason,
damn,
the clams have just opened
the clams
properly. Ascend, young man, from your video games. The clams have opened.
I'll be right there. That's a lie. He won't be right there. And he has mistimed the opening of the clams as they release their precious juice.
Are you into the whole – I've seen this in commercials.
And the guy at the Jewel screwed it up, and he sold the clams by weight instead of by clam. I think there was something – there's something weird about the new guy.
What are you supposed to sell them by, weight or clam?
No, they're supposed to be 99 cents.
What if by clam, two if by weight?
He says – I said, how much are the clams? And he said 99 cents a pound.
Okay.
And I said, are you sure? Are you sure? And – because they're 99 cents a clam.
Clams are kind of heavy.
But I said, I'll take the rest of those clams. And I got like a bunch of these big, beautiful cherry stones.
What if you got them for?
It was like $3 for all of them.
Well.
He screwed up.
Then he shouldn't be in the basement playing Fortnite anymore. There was a 10-minute limit set. I don't have kids of the family yet, but would like to, and would imagine that by the time I get there, the games will change and the Wi-Fi will change and whatnot. But the commercials that you've seen for like that, you just turn the family Wi-Fi off.
Yeah,
that's where
no, because then my wife is throwing things at me.
Yeah, but that's
she's busy doing an Instagram story about
shoes. Passive aggressive parenting that I want to get into. Just this whole like, the Wi-Fi is all, I can't access anything. It must be dinner time, and I don't have to say anything.
That's the version of the Jason Goff move. That's the version of
what's his move?
Flipping the lights on and off to remind people who's paying for the power in the house.
Oh, see, we had that when I was growing up. My dad, we'd flip the lights off and off in the basement. It wasn't the power reminder so much. It was to get your ass upstairs. The lights are going on and off. I like that power move, though.
224 texter says, my son is your son's age, Dan. And he told me yesterday Apex Legends has come and gone. He says, no building, no fun.
They paid what's-his-face. They paid Ninja like $1 million to go play that game and promote it.
But the building's
it's
the
big
really
business.
But the building's the really cool part. And the 708 says, nobody watches Mergansers anymore. Everyone knows it's all about the banded coot now.
Yeah, they're catching on. Clams are the Fortnite of seafood. All the cool people are eating mussels now, Dan.
Yeah, here they come. When we come back, it's going to be Danny Parkins, the McNeil and Parkins show, the top of the hour, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With only 5 home games remaining, the Chicago Wolves are making their push to the playoffs. Celebrate this 25th anniversary season with free parking courtesy of Kia, as well as discounted concessions. For ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Transition next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.